This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of August 2017. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of August, which this week have been edited by Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Your readers today are Frieda Bates.
Hello.
Paul Maxlow Tomlinson.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. I must first apologise on behalf of the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the fact that no edition went out last week. There was an equipment failure that resulted in the sound on the recording being unusable, and we hope that this now has been ratified. The main headlines this week are Respite Centre Closure Danger, The Robber Who Targeted Co-op Village Store, and The Inventor On Hand to Ditch Keys. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, Frieda, please?
Yes, Respite Centre Closure Danger. An overnight children's respite centre near Winchester may close. Hampshire County Council is asking for people's views on proposals to shut Merrydale on Church Lane, Kingsworthy, which cares for young people with learning disabilities. The 8-week consultation is also considering the future of Sunbeams in Aldershot. As of March 2017, there were 28 users of Merrydale and 24 members of staff. The mother of one young user said Merrydale was a lifesaver. County Councillor Keith Mance, executive lead member for Children's Services, said, "I am aware that this can be an unsettling time for those families who could be affected by proposals on possible changes to services. However, at this stage, I must stress that no decisions have been made. I think it is extremely important that the groups of people who could be affected, as well as the wider public, have the chance to have their say, and I urge them to do this through the public consultation. The County Council say they are aiming to develop a potential offer which has a less institutionalised approach and is more in line with choices that families are asking for. The offer could include family breaks, specialised foster care for one or more nights, home care breaks with a carer staying overnight, and activity centre trips, as well as residential respite care provided by other organisations." Nikki Bloxage from Chandler's Ford, whose daughter Ella, 11, uses the centre, said, "It's a lifesaver. I desperately don't want it to close. It's an amazing place. Just coping day to day is really tough. Ella requires a specialist bed, equipment, and what Merrydale offer is all that with well-trained staff. I have two other children, and it gives us space and time to spend with them, which I normally spend caring for Ella." Councillor Jackie Porter, the local city and county councillor, said, "I welcome the review. This has been talked about for a long time, and we need to make sure that families have effective respite care. We regret the people that could lose their jobs, but there are plenty of opportunities to continue within Hampshire County Council. I'm keen to see others like Sebastian's Action Trust and Naomi House and Jack's Place being used. I welcome it because it's a service that does really well, but it can do even better." Councillor Malcolm Prince, who represents the Worthies, said, "From my perspective, it is critical that full notice is taken of the staff, families and attendees at Merrydale. Having lived within 100 yards of Merrydale for 25 years, I am of the opinion that the centre has been welcomed to the Worthies and it is indeed a positive for us all. The centre in Kingsworthy has the benefit of a regular bus service, which has a stop at the entrance. It is close to the local park and countryside. The park has special facilities for the disabled and is a short walking distance, largely traffic-free from the centre. There will be drop-in consultations at United Church on Jury Street on September the 20th from 9:30 till 11:30 a.m. and at the Swan Hotel on West Street, Alsford on September the 29th from 10 till 11:30 a.m. The public can also make their views known at www.hants.gov.uk /consultations before October the 2nd.
Sorry. And it's over to Paul for the second headline story.
The robber who targeted Co-op village store. Staff caught up in a daylight robbery at a convenience store in Colden Common have been taunted by pranksters since their ordeal. Police are hunting a masked gunman who stormed the Co-op in St. Vigor Way, where children were among the customers. Officers rushed to the shop on Tuesday, August the 1st, after reports of a man holding up a cashier with what was believed to be a gun and demanding money. Colden Common Parish Council Chairman Richard Izard said one of the cashiers said that three people had come in since the robbery pretending to have a gun and making a joke about having a gun. "That's what one of the staff told me. It's nothing to laugh about," I said. "It's not exactly very funny." Sue Cook, City Councillor for Colden Common and Twyford, said, "I'm overwhelmed by the whole thing. I've been in contact with the police. It's awful. For someone to be so bold and arrogant in the middle of the day is shocking. I fear for the staff." Speaking about people taunting staff, she added, "We do have a group of youths that unfortunately have caused some disruption in the area, but we're always managing it with the police." Armed officers were seen in the area along with sniffer dogs, and an arson task force van was also parked close to the scene. A police helicopter circled over Colden Common and nearby villages. Police taped off an area just outside the store at around 1:30 on Tuesday following the robbery and continued to patrol the area late into the evening. Police have released CCTV images of the robber, which show him brandishing a black pistol and wearing a balaclava and hoodie. It is not known if the firearm is real or imitation. The police said a man who was reported to be carrying a small black gun and had his face covered made threats to the cashier before leaving the store with money from the till. The cashier was shaken up but not injured. The man is described as white, wearing a black balaclava and a camo jacket with a hood, grey tracksuit or jogging bottoms, and black and white trainers. Anyone with information should contact the police on 101. Beside the article, there is a picture, rather badly delineated, of the armed robber approaching the Co-op store counter.
And it's over to Jane for the third headline story.
And the third headline is "The Inventor on Hand to Ditch Keys." An inventor is the first person in Britain with no need for keys in his life, thanks to a microchip in his left hand, which allows him to open his front door, access his office, and even start his car. Stephen Northam, 33, had the chip, the size of a grain of rice, implanted between his thumb and finger to make his life easier. But his wife has refused to join in and still fumbles around for her keys. The remarkable technology offers a glimpse of the future, and Mr. Northam is now rolling the service out nationwide for businesses and individuals. He has teamed up with Dr. Jeff Watson, a consultant anaesthetist at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, to ensure the implant procedure is carried out to a medical standard. Mr. Northam's new company, Biotech, is the first in the UK to offer human implantable technology via professional medical procedures. He said the technology is similar to a microchip implanted for cats and dogs, and the implant procedure takes just 30 seconds. The father of one now has technology fitted to both his home and his BMW, which starts when his hand is on the wheel. Meanwhile, his primary school teacher wife, Becky, 30, must use a fob to get into their home as she is scared of needles. He said she's not interested in it, so she has a normal key fob to get into the house. She thinks it's a bit freaky and she thinks I'm a bit mad. The couple have a 10-month-old daughter called Poppy, and he added, "I would potentially let Poppy have it done down the line if she wants it done." Mr. Northam from Otterbourne said that while it has fun gimmicks, the chip is also a major breakthrough for the medical world. He said, I was the guinea pig and the driver behind it. I teamed up with a friend who's a doctor and he implanted it. The chip and the implant procedure costs between £230 and £260, while complete offices where employees can access doors or use equipment will cost upwards of £5,000. The implants work using both radio frequency identification and near-field communication technologies, much like those used on smartphones. Mr. Northam, also a part-time Winchester University business management lecturer, said, there are two demographics of people. There are those who think it's brilliant and those who think it's the government taking control. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Mr. Northam holding up his left hand, and then in his right hand he's holding an X-ray of that hand with just a little tiny black mark between the bone of the thumb and the bone of the first finger, which is obviously the microchip.
And that concludes the headline stories. We'll continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, and editorial comment. We'll end with items of general news. I'll start with the death notices. Busbridge. Gladys Cecilia, known as Buzz Busbridge, peacefully aged 90. Crawford. Richard George Crawford, peacefully at home, aged 72. Ince. David Henry Gasson Ince, DFC, peacefully after a short illness, aged 96. Joyce, Lillian Louisa Lou Joyce, formerly of Sparsholt and Denmark Court, aged 88. Larkin, David Thomas Larkin, peacefully after a short illness at RHCH. McArdle, Vera Rose McArdle, at the Red House Care Home, Fareham. And finally, Thornton, Lady Rosamond Thornton, who was the widow of Sir Peter Thornton, peacefully at home. We've got a Christian comment, read by Frieda.
Assisi Revisited, Rediscovering Vision. We're in Assisi, Italy, for a significant birthday of my husband, Nicholas. From our window, we can see silvery olive trees and the late summer landscape of the rolling Umbrian hills. Hills which St. Francis of Assisi must have crossed and recrossed on his many journeys throughout Italy. Ever since that momentous day when he received the call from Christ, "Go, Francis, and rebuild my church." A mural of this, also painted above our bed, is just in case we forget. Francis and his followers were fired by that original zeal to reawaken the church in its authentic mission. It is almost impossible to comprehend the impact that St. Francis and St. Clare have had, and the ripples that are still felt across so many countries. To give just one example, I recently visited an Irish Franciscan sister in Gaza. She is running 10 clinics in that troubled country. She's the only Christian, assisted by many faithful Muslims. And she calls to mind for me the amazing story of St. Francis meeting the Sultan of his own time. She is one of many Franciscans and Third Order Franciscans who are still inspired by that original vision. Go, Francis, and rebuild my church. On a global level, that vision is still vibrant. In the Holy Land, for example, the custos, or guardian of the holy places, is always a Franciscan. Recently, with the election of Pope Francis, who chose that name deliberately, Francis's legacy has taken on a new life. The trappings of riches and the accompanying lifestyle are no longer to be tolerated by the church and its disciples. I recall the impact, some years ago, of the film Brother Sun, Sister Moon, where the viewer saw the Duomo of Assisi on a Sunday morning during High Mass. The bishops and prelates, with rich vestments and jewel-encrusted rings, were the celebrants. But where were the people? there was no congregation. The people were down in the valley at St. Damiano with Francis and Claire and the goats, the sheep and the hens. Total chaos. Pure Zeffirelli. But the purity of facial expressions and the enthusiastic singing could not fail to warm the heart. So the vision still lives on. But perhaps there is still a need to come to places like Assisi to hear the words ringing in our own ears. Go and rebuild my church. This letter was from Mary Gray, and as you can hear, has moved me very much.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 16 letters this week, and we'll start with one by Paul.
This is a letter from John Miller of Bishop Sutton, Alsford, and it is a tribute to Robert Hardy. Sir, many of your readers will have been saddened, as I was, by the death of Robert Hardy. His wide range of performances on stage and screen displayed a very special talent. I'm so pleased that I managed to bring him twice to our local stages in recent years. When he told me he was working on a recital of letters between Winston and Clementine Churchill, I persuaded him to perform it at the Best of British Festival 2012 in the Winchester Guildhall. Churchill's granddaughter, Celia Sandys, read Clementine's letters, and Robert drew on his previous representations of Winston to recreate the great man's voice and presence with amazing accuracy. When the Alsford Historical and Literary Society invited me to produce a celebration of their 50th anniversary in 2016, I immediately thought of Robert, who by then had moved to nearby Avington Park. Happily, he agreed to talk to me about his long career, and his stories so entranced his packed audience that they gave him a standing ovation when we rose to leave the stage at Perrin School. That turned out to be one of his last public performances, and I shall always remember him as a perfect gentleman, as well as a very great actor. He will be much missed. John Miller.
Over to Jane for letter number two.
And this is from Councillor Roy Perry and is headed Civic Services. Sir, your readers currently have a crucial opportunity to influence important decisions about how Hampshire County Council services are delivered in the future by responding to our Serving Hampshire Balancing the Budget consultation. The survey is about County Council services delivered to over 500,000 Hampshire households, things like social care to vulnerable adults and children, education, roads, waste recycling and tips, and libraries. Due to national austerity measures, higher demand for some services and inflationary pressures, the County Council is facing an anticipated £140 million shortfall in its budget by April 2019. With less money available and growing demand for council services, tough decisions will be needed about what County Council can and cannot do in the future. That's why we're inviting people to share their views with us on how the County Council can balance its budget. There are several high-level options on which we're collecting feedback. These include potential changes to services, further ways to generate income, use of reserves, potential increases to council tax, and changing local government in Hampshire. At this stage, we're not proposing specific changes to services, just examples of possible options. We'll be using residents' views to then develop future proposals on which there will be more detailed public engagement. The Balancing the Budget consultation closes on August the 21st. It can be completed online at www.hants.com. hampshire.gov.uk/consultations. Copies are also available from Hampshire Libraries. Listening first before taking major decisions about the future remains our commitment to the people of Hampshire. Faced with our biggest financial challenge to date, we're encouraging residents to take a few minutes to share their views with us. They really matter. This feedback is helpful in shaping important decisions about the services delivered to over 1.3 million Hampshire residents every single day. And that was from Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, Winchester.
And Frieda's got letter number three.
This letter from Adam Nicholas, Paintersfield St Cross, is headed Crumbling, and it's about the River Park Leisure Centre. With this facility being given phenomenal financial support from the council, see Councillor Gottlieb questions how such an ageing, crumbling building got in such a poor state. That was in the Hampshire Chronicle letters, July 27th. It is astonishing that any council would provide such funding without due diligence. For these reasons, there is every need for the Chronicle editorial to be sceptical of any future schemes that involve phenomenal amounts of taxpayers' cash. Just how phenomenal has the council spending been on River Park, Councillor?
Councillor Eileen Berry of Priors Dean Road, Hairstock, has written saying, I don't think too many people are aware of the proposal that Hampshire County Council is charging £3 entrance to the Great Hall. At first, I was concerned that £3 for everyone wasn't right or fair, but with more information, it turns out to be acceptable. Young children do not pay. Students have a deduction, the elderly also, and there is a ticket price for a family, and it's still below anything I've encountered when I've taken my grandchildren to Poulton's Park or indeed anywhere else you have to pay. Well, why are they asking for an entrance fee? The simple answer is for the upkeep. You would say the Hampshire County Council has money set aside for such things, but that is not true. It's not enough, as was proven with the cathedral. They could help with a donation, but the cathedral had to raise in the region of 26 million. So if the cathedral, who charge a considerable amount for entrance fee for their renovations and the upkeep, I can understand why the Great Hall needs to do exactly the same, and the entrance fee is just the beginning. Councillor Eileen Berry.
And this letter from Jane Harding is headed Wrong Place. Sir, having read the letters about the positioning of the new recreation centre at Bar End, I have been studying the map of Winchester. It looks as if the central areas of housing for families are in Fulflood, Hyde, Abbots Barton and Winnell, all of which are within walking distance of the present recreation centre, but would probably need to use cars to reach the Bar End site. Highcliffe would be the only housing area within easy walking distance. Stanmore, Badger Farm, St Cross, Week and Hairstock would need to use cars or buses for both, although the St Cross area is within walking or cycling distance of the old wreck at the moment, Bar End would be more difficult. Villages to the north, south and east would, of course, have easier access driving to Bar End. However, as one of the major complaints seems to be the fumes from traffic passing around North Walls and St George's Street, it seems that the local families currently able to walk, who must be some of the major users of the facilities, would now have to be driving around exactly that route in order to reach the new site, which would surely only increase traffic, not reduce it. And that was from Jane Harding, Backstreet St Cross.
And Frieda's got the next.
This letter from Paul A. Dix, Tichborne Down, Alsford, is headed Perfidy. Sir, the perfidy of developers who consult local people, make promises, then change their words later, is perfectly seen in Seaward's latest plans for their Sun Lane development in Alsford. Two roundabouts proposed to access the development from the A31 Alsford bypass were originally to go in the furthest point away from existing houses. Now the location has been quietly moved in the planning application to just 100 metres from those houses. The environmental effects of lighting pollution, potential flooding from the A31 and traffic noise, plus the likely destruction of existing planted embankments, will make lives intolerable for many Alsford residents. Grade 2 listed houses are also threatened by the latest proposals. Seawards are obviously hoping that local planners will nod this through, but there is a growing torrent of objection from concerned Alsford residents who do not want to see their town destroyed.
David Selby of West Hill Road North, South Wanston, writes, "Sir, I agree with Ryan Chupan's lawyer, who wrote in the Chronicle on the August the 3rd, that he didn't think that anyone in their right mind would ever think that stealing a donation box was okay. He then went on to say that his client was clean of drugs. He was then representing a client who was making a plea in mitigation. If he was clean, then I question in the present circumstances whether sending him to prison was the right thing to do. It would be like locking up a reformed alcoholic in a bar for a week. For we all know prisons are teeming with drugs and there are not sufficient staff to stem the tide. However, we also know that addicts are notorious liars if they think it'll get them their next drink or fix or out of trouble. I'm suggesting, therefore, that it is time that we recognised addiction for what it is. It's an illness that falls within the responsibility of our mental health service, which is also understaffed, and prison, which already confines thousands of people with such problems, is not the place for this young man who will likely come out more addicted than when he went in, if he's now clean. If he is lying and not clean, then he's seriously in need of proper treatment, which he will not get from 20 weeks at least in the prison. With our prisons bursting at the seams, not good for prisoners, and costing an enormous amount of money, not good for we taxpayers, we must engage in a serious discussion about what society should do with people who have committed an offence but who are not a danger to the public, although possibly more of a danger to themselves. We also know that many prisoners are repeat offenders, and we also know that of these repeat offenders, the majority are semi-literate and therefore not well-equipped, firstly to do a job, and if successful in doing so, keeping a job. This discussion needs to include the victims of crime, ex-prisoners, employers, people working in the fields of education and health, plus politicians and journalists, both of whom play a considerable part in influencing public opinion. David Selby."
And this letter from Dr. Andrew Norman is headed "Shopkeeper." "Sir, I wonder if anyone remembers my grandfather, Thomas Walden, who ran a village store from his house in Stanmore Lane, St. Cross, Winchester, in the 1940s. He was blinded near Ypres in 1915, yet he managed the store single-handed. He is the subject of two of my books, A Brummy Boy Goes to War and Kindly Light. If so, I should be delighted to hear from you. My telephone number is 01202-706-198 and my email is anorman@fastmail.fm. And that was from Dr. Andrew Norman of Bournemouth.
This letter from Elizabeth Crawley of St. Swithin Street in Winchester is headed Illegal Rat Run. Sir, your correspondent, Phil Gagg, reminds your readers of the scandalous, illegal rat run along Great Minster Street and Market Square. This was among the letters in the Chronicle on August the 3rd. Years ago, when the no-entry signs were first put up, great local rejoicing became quickly muted anger, as the sign was, and still is, largely ignored. To the best of my knowledge, there are never any checks on vehicles as to their honest, essential need for access. The route lies through the heart of historic Winchester, close to the cathedral on two sides, and is, of course, vital to our many tourists and visitors, as well as local residents, as a pedestrian route. It all adds to our polluted air. Various solutions come to mind as an alternative to permanently closing access to Great Minster Street from the west. A small, neat barrier opening, only opened to pre-registered vehicles at that point, is one. An automatic recognition scheme would be needed, and care needed over valid need for access. Another, less severe, would be traffic lights or a barrier in Market Lane beside the Wessex Hotel. This would change to green only every 5 or 7 minutes. Car drivers all hate delays. Checks would be needed, but it would discourage the constant traffic flow, which of course can go via North Walls. The Cathedral Streets Residents Association has asked for access on this illegal rat run. They want action, and they've asked again and again. Please, would the City Council put this matter on their early autumn agenda for attention as soon as they reconvene? Elizabeth Crawley.
Rupert Pitt of Church Lane, Colden Common, writes, the new Bar End Leisure Centre will cost £36 million. And he asks why homes can't be built instead of a sports centre. Why is there not a £2 million upgrade to the existing centre in River Park and the remaining money spent on building good quality, affordable or social housing? That's the most pressing need in Winchester. It's clear from the excellent houses built in Wavell Way, Stanmore, that the City Council is capable of building robust, good-looking social homes, unlike some of the housing in the Badger Farm gulag like Maytree Close. This is what could be built at Bar End. Why is there a pressing demand for an Olympic pool, etc., for affluent sports enthusiasts when there is already a swimming pool and not proper housing for those who work in Winchester and cannot afford the high prices of houses to buy or houses to rent? What are Winchester's values? Rupert Pitt.
And Phil Yates writes, halcyon days. Sir, it was refreshing to read the views of a comparative newcomer to Winchester on the shops on our high street, Chronicle August the 3rd. As an elderly Wintonian, having resided here for the majority of my life, Natalie Shaw may like to know that in the 1930s there were 11 butcher's shops, 3 fishmongers and 3 greengrocers that adorned the high street. Only 3 restaurants were trading, and we even had a cinema, the Picture House, now Jack Wills, University Outfitters. In those halcyon days, businesses were family-owned, with such names as Warren's, still privately trading, Clifton's, Edmund's and Townend's, to name a few. The shine has vanished from our high street and we are left with uninspired trading shops and, in addition, those market stalls. No wonder residents shop elsewhere. Another town to add to Natalie's list is Romsey, a delightful small town to visit for shopping, surrounded by picturesque countryside. Winchester's High Street is believed to be the oldest street in the country. It was built by the Romans when they arrived here in 50 AD. We should be proud of that fact and show off our heritage accordingly. And that was from Phil Yates of Tower Street in Winchester and is accompanied by a photograph of the Winchester High Street. It has to be said, it's absolutely crammed with shoppers, even without the market stalls there.
This letter from Tony Wyman of Orchard Close, Alsford, is headed Mist Point. Sir, it is good to read. Article was Chronicle Comment, July the 27th, that our local paper is still supportive of local retailers and praises those still in business. However, there was also a complacency about your leader and a very important missed point. You observed that most purchases are still made in shop. True, it is probably still over 80%. However, retailers have large fixed costs, including rent, rates, wages, insurance, and utility bills. For most retail business, something like the first 90% plus of sales goes on covering the fixed costs, with only what's left over providing any profit. Take away 20% of trade, and what was once a thriving business becomes a loss maker that could rapidly go out of business. That is the point you missed. A business faced with such a problem has to focus on reducing its costs. Some, but not all, landlords have helped find ways to reduce rents. But government has taken totally the reverse path by piling on costs to retailers. And Winchester seems to have been singled out for exceptional punishment. Rates needed to be reduced, and yet they have been pushed up, and in some cases by as much as 300%. The proposed rate reliefs do not even begin to tackle the problem. Wage costs have been pushed up by increases in the minimum wage and pension auto-enrolment, and with small businesses expected to absorb all the costs. As for insurance and utility bills, they just defy gravity. In Winchester, this problem has been further compounded by poor traffic management and parking strategies that have satisfied no one, resulting in congestion, pollution, and insufficient parking, all of which serve to reduce footfall and trade. It will only get worse when SSE digs up Jury Street this autumn. Politicians, local and national, have let us down. Only those businesses that either have a higher profit margin or are unaffected by online sales can survive. And even these have issues with footfall. The balance of Winchester retail is inevitably moving to food, takeouts and eat-in, and discount shops, with only jewellers seemingly able to buck the trend. Let's just hope that we avoid the fixed odds betting machine arcades. Tony Wyman.
This letter is entitled Green Sham. The writer has not published his name in the paper, but he has allowed his name and address to be supplied to the Hampshire Chronicle. So, with reference to the article Green Energy Scheme at Down Farm near Oliver's Battery, I seem to be missing something here, namely, what is green about it? Lithium is mined, main sources being Australia and Chile, and transported to the Far East to be made into lithium-ion batteries. Said batteries are placed in 16 shipping-type containers and transported by sea to the UK and then by road to Down Farm. They're then to be used to extract off-peak energy from the national grid, convert it to DC, store it, invert it back to AC, and then sell it back the same day at peak. My O-level physics says that AC to DC and back to AC has a total energy loss of 45% by way of heat. This heat has to be controlled by air conditioning units, two on each container, which have not been factored in. No doubt one of the scientists at WinACC will correct me and provide the exact energy loss figure from AC to DC and back to AC. I'm pretty certain that this figure was not available from the applicant. This concept has been packaged and sold where everybody has assumed that this is green energy. On the planning application, there's no mention of it. Surely, once energy has entered the grid, it has lost the status renewable and cannot be called green. Renewable energy is the output from solar and wind farms before it enters the grid. Once in the grid, who is to say where it has come from? I think everybody has jumped on the fashionable green bandwagon. If you stand back, a purely commercial operation has taken advantage of a situation where off-peak electricity can be bought and sold back the same day at a profit. I think the planners have not taken on board that this is not renewable energy, otherwise they would have applied the NPPF more rigorously. I would ask WinACC how they think supporting the above scenario has helped climate change when the end result is a large energy waste by hot air. I support energy storage in the right place, but not on Greenbelt for purely commercial gain. There is one aspect of green that applies. The planning committee have asked that the containers be painted that colour.
And this letter from Major R.D. Cassidy is headed Calais Key Role. Sir, much has been said about the film and action at Dunkirk, and rightly so, but they were not alone. My regiment, the Rifle Brigade, was one of the three infantry regiments supported by tanks, all defending Calais days prior to the action at Dunkirk. Mr. Churchill, the Prime Minister, wrote, "Every hour you continue to exist is of the greatest help to the British Expeditionary Force. Have greatest possible admiration for your splendid stand. Evacuation will not, repeat not, take place, and craft required for above purpose are to return to Dover." Later, he was to say, "Only 30 survivors were brought off by the Navy, and we do not know the fate of their comrades. Their sacrifice was not, however, in vain. At least two armoured divisions, which otherwise would have been turned against the British Expeditionary Force, had to be sent to overcome them. They have added another page to the glories of the Light Division. Mr. Winston S. Churchill, the House of Commons, 4th of June, 1940. Every year, the four regiments plus the Royal Green Jackets and the French people of Calais come together for memorial service to remember our fallen and those who spent the war years as prisoners of war." And that was from Major Retired R.D. Cassidy, MBE, Fifields Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
Adrian Bates of Church Street writes about the Winchester Regeneration Scheme. Up and down the country, public awareness has belatedly realised that such schemes result in the loss of public open space with unexpected consequences. Once lost, never regained. Developers entice the local authority with some financial manoeuvrings to hand over the access land, previously public highways, etc., to enclose them within the new development. As a result, such spaces, although deceptively labelled privately owned public spaces, are nothing of the sort. Once done, the new owners can make whatever rules they like as to public access, with no accountability whatsoever. I've sought assurances from the Winchester City Council that no such deals will be entered into in any of the schemes under consideration. I encourage residents to make themselves aware of such dangers before it is too late. Adrian Bates.
And I'm afraid that's the last of the letters for this week. Thank you very much to everyone who contributed. Now it's time for your say. We asked what people thought of the world record £198 million transfer of Brazilian footballer Neymar from Barcelona to Paris Saint-Germain, and Frida has got the responses.
John Langridge, 70, retired from Winchester City Centre, said, "Nobody is worth that much in football. It's unbelievable." Pete Francis, 59, bus driver from Badger Farm, said, "It is unbelievable. It is too much money. No player is worth that amount." Sid Holden, 89, retired of Winchester Road, Oxford, said, "Absolutely too much. I played as a youngster just for the love of the game, and I got nothing at all." Daniel Bailey, 37, labourer from Winnell in Winchester, said, "I think they are overpaid. I think they give the wrong impression to young people, as they get away with a lot. But they do provide entertainment for many."
We're going back through the mist of time to our dusty old files for historical items. And we'll start with 25 Years Ago, read by Paul.
25 years ago, on Friday, August the 14th, 1992. Controversial plans for an hotel or offices near the M3 at Otterbourne Hill, rejected by Eastleigh Borough Council, will be decided by a ministry inspector on appeal. PGC Construction Limited, part of the Purbury Chamberlain Estates Group, wants the Environment Department to overturn the borough's decision. The site is currently occupied by the Mowlam as a compound for their motorway construction contract. A spokesman for Boyart Area Residence Group said the area was part of a green lung separating Boyart Wood, Albrook, Chandler's Ford and Otterbourne. A massive development scheme for the whole area has been thrown out by the local council. All applications so far submitted have met with fierce opposition from local residents who are represented by our group, he said. There is another item too. Hundreds of health authorities' records were destroyed in a suspicious fire at Winchester's Victoria Hospital in the early hours of yesterday morning. The blaze started shortly after 2:30 a.m. in the outbuildings at the Alsford Road complex, which is used as a hostel for homeless people. No one was in the outbuildings, but one contained financial records dating back to the 1970s, said a spokesman for Winchester Health Authority.
Change taking us back 50 years ago.
And two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 12th, 1967. Firstly, IBM is in the course of establishing a multinational internal communications centre in the UK. The system, which will be located at IBM's laboratories at Hursley House near Winchester, has as its chairman Mr. Jacques Maisonrouge, who is the president of IBM's World Trade Europe Corporation. Its managing director will be Mr. Nick Jonas, who returns to the UK after a four-year assignment overseas. The other directors of IBM Information Services Limited are Mr. Christian de Waltner, president of the IBM France, Mr. Vala Bösenberg, president of IBM Germany, Mr. Baraghi Lazzetti, president of IBM Italy, and Mr. Edwin Nixon, managing director of IBM UK. And secondly, although it is not a bumper year, this harvest looks as if it will be better than last year's rather poor show. The word in most farmers' mouths seems to be average, so that allowing for their natural pessimism and some fine weather, things do not look too bad. Storms have not caused much damage so far, but disease has had its toil, with loose smut being fairly prevalent this year. Most of the winter barley is safely gathered in at the moment, and the rest is going as well as can be expected. The farmers on the chalk have fared better than those on heavier ground, and there have been reports of some harvesting early. Here again, the main voice of opinion seems to be average for the time of harvest, though some of the new varieties, Golden Promise in particular, can be harvested a week earlier.
We're going back 100 years ago now, and Frieda's got two items from then.
100 years ago, Saturday, August the 11th, 1917. After the abnormally continuous rainfall of the previous week, when the outlook for holiday keepers was gloomy in the extreme, the change to brilliant sunshine and warmth gladdened the hearts of people generally and children in particular. a vast company from the neighbouring villages and also from Reading and Basingstoke assembled on the village green in the afternoon to witness a first-rate programme of sports. The afternoon sports were mostly for the children, but provision was made for events for ladies and gentlemen, and these, comprising popular and amusing races, a jingling ring, tugs of war, etc., kept the vast assemblage in good humour. Corporal Essen, better known as Charlie Chaplin, proved himself to be a tower of strength for the cause in hand, and was primarily instrumental in collecting funds on behalf of our blinded soldiers, for whose benefit the day's proceedings were devoted. The second item is from the battlefront. In the southern half of the Ypres battlefield, the enemy, after heavy bombardment, attacked the north and south of the Ypres-Comines canal yesterday morning. German troops reached Hollebecq, but they were at once driven out and left several men prisoners. Elsewhere, their attack completely failed. On the previous day, we gained some ground northwest of Saint-Julien. The weather has improved.
Paul's taken us back 200 years ago.
There are two items for Monday, August the 11th, 1817, 2 years after the Battle of Waterloo. A few days since, in pulling down the old wall of the vicarage stable at Chard for the purpose of building a new one, a very ancient and beautiful coin was found about a foot from the foundation, which proved to be a golden penny of Richard II. Bishop Fleetwood, in his preface to his Chronicum Precociogum, speaking of ancient coins of England, says, "I'm confident that to a common curiosity, a piece of gold older than the last Edward would appear a very great rarity." Edward VI, the last of that name, began his reign in 1547. Richard II commenced in 1377. The golden penny, therefore, of the second Richard, reckoning from the beginning of the respective reigns of these two sovereigns, is just 150 years older than any coin of Edward VI, and is at this time, 1817, just 480 years old. The second item is headed coffee. The demand for coffee continues brisk and extensive. Since our last, every description of ordinary Jamaica and Dutch coffee may be stated 3 shillings higher, particularly the former. The finer qualities of Jamaica coffee may be stated at the advance of 4 shillings to 5 shillings. The public sales since our last, including today's amount of 1,555 casks, and 2,119 bags. This forenoon, the demand was not brisk. 4 sales were brought forward. Nearly the whole were sold. In several instances, the Jamaica descriptions went for 2 shillings to 3 shillings.
It's back to the present with Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum, an alternative look at the news, has 4 items this week. Firstly, a safe but not sound at Compton Lock. An email from David Abbott of Shawford. The neighbours of Compton Lock are used to picking up rubbish, including smashed beer bottles, clothing, beach towels, charcoal barbecues and inflatable boats, all unsightly to the South Downs National Park and detrimental to the Itchen Navigation's wildlife. 3 weeks ago, a fireproof safe appeared in the river and was subsequently hauled to the bank. It is very heavy. It appears to have been forced open and to be spilling asbestos. Rather a negative, then, for the many children who play around the lock. I notified the police. Parish Councillor Myra Wilkinson notified the City Council. This unsafe garbage has not been removed. Perhaps one of your readers can advise us who is responsible for removing this potentially hazardous object, which may have been left here as a result of a crime. And there is a picture of the safe lying in the bit of grass next to the beautiful Compton Lock area where so many children swim, particularly in the summer holidays, and the door is open of the lock with the asbestos spilling out. Secondly, Go and park elsewhere. This truly is the silly season. A row over a car parked where it perhaps shouldn't have been in Winchester has made national news. It was reported on the Daily Mail online website that an Audi was left in a city centre private car park. When the driver returned, the vehicle had been spray-painted with the words "Park Elsewhere," followed by a graphic four-letter insult. The online article helpfully had a photo of the vehicle and the car park after the Audi had been removed. The car was parked on land off Cross Street, close to the Hampshire Constabulary base on the High Street, and the police told the Daily Mail that the incident had not been reported to them and they are not investigating it. In a normal week, this might have made a few paragraphs in the local paper, such as the Hampshire Chronicle, part of the ebb and flow of local life. It just goes to show how steamed up some people can get when it comes to parking in the congested city centre, and how desperate some news organisations get in the long dog days of August. And a little third one. Latest news in the wars of the apostrophe. It looks like a small victory in the grammar wars. Waterstones, that is Waterstone apostrophe S, had reportedly been considering whether to drop the apostrophe from its name. However, its two branches in Winchester, one on the High Street and one in the Brooks, are now sporting the punctuation. It seems that for now the firm will not go the way of Boots, B-O-O-T-S, and Debenhams, no apostrophe, and most likely Sainsbury's, that is Sainsbury, apostrophe S. And lastly, new footpath improves safety on A272. Taking a stroll at a Hampshire landmark has suddenly got a bit more pleasant and certainly safer. The grass verge between the car park at Cheesefoot Head and the nearby South Downs Way was not a place for the faint-hearted. Traffic on the A272 would roar past only inches from pedestrians along the 50-yard stretch. But now it would appear that the National Park Authority has purchased a small piece of farmland and is putting the footpath behind the hedge. There will be many people thankful. And this is accompanied by a photograph of, from I believe, the parking area at Cheesefoot Head, where there is now a metal fence between the field and the hedge going along the edge of the field next to the A272 with a wooden gate leading into it so that people can have a footpath off the 272.
To Frieda for the editorial comment.
Private affluence and public squalor. The disconnect is striking. We report that Winchester is at the top of the jobs league with an estimated 2,000 vacancies. This newspaper also discloses on the front page that the County Council is consulting on the closure of the Merrydale Respite Centre in Kingsworthy that helps families of children with learning disabilities. So, on the one hand, we have evidence of a booming economy, coupled with a local authority that says it is under such financial pressure that it is considering closing a facility described by one mother as a lifesaver. That same authority, Hampshire County Council, has deliberately muzzled its council tax demands in recent years. There is no avoiding the obvious. As a society, we seem to have become addicted to low taxation, even if the impact on the quality of social provision is highly detrimental. The level of council tax has been held artificially low, and now the County Council is seeking to reduce its services instead of increasing the council tax. The people of Hampshire seem to be happy with this, as the Conservatives are in complete control of the authority since Southampton and Portsmouth became unitary authorities. But we are gradually sleepwalking into a situation where, whilst many people are doing well, the public authorities that hold the safety net are finding it increasingly threadbare.
Now I've got a few items for What's On. On Tuesday, August the 15th, there's a lunchtime organ recital in Winchester Cathedral at 1 p.m. It's by Caroline Craig and will include Bach's Fantasy and Fugue. There's no charge, but there will be a retiring collection. On Saturday the 19th and Sunday the 20th of August, at the North Walls Recreation Ground, there's a Cheese and Chili Festival. It's a weekend of mixed activities for everyone. Entry is £4. On Tuesday the 22nd of August, in Winchester Cathedral, there's another lunchtime concert at 1pm. This time it's a performance by soprano opera singer Nadine Benjamin. It's a free concert again, and there is a retiring collection. It's a return to West Side Story at Winchester's Theatre Royal at 7:30pm on Wednesday the 23rd of August to Saturday the 26th of August. It's by Rick Nick Youth Theatre. Now, there's a box office number if you want further information or a ticket, and that is a Winchester number 01962 840440. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 11th of August at 5:46am and it begins at 8:34pm. On Wednesday the 16th of August it ends at 5:54am and begins at 8:24pm. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you've got a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. We're now going to continue in terms of general news, and we'll start with one read by Paul.
The headline is Gearing Up for the Boomtown Festival. Thousands will flock to Boomtown Festival from Thursday and over the weekend. The 60,000 capacity festival at the Matherley Bowl near Winchester is the biggest immersive music and theatrical festival in the world. Organisers have announced more than 160 artists spanning a huge variety of genres, including reggae, folk, jazz, world, dub, dancehall, ska, house, techno and garage. Headliners will include two-tone ska band The Specials, hip-hop pioneers Cypress Hill, London rapper M.I.A., Arrested Development, reggae legends Toots and the Maytals, and 90s legends Chaka, Demus and Pliers. The annual event runs until August the 13th. This year's festival will feature 80 individual street venues, 30 main stages, along with a farmers market, which will showcase Hampshire's very best produce, and 100 free workshops and activities for all ages. The safety of festival goers will be a concern for some following a fire last year which destroyed more than 90 vehicles, as well as several drug-related deaths over the last few years. Silver Police Commander for Boomtown Festival, Superintendent Kelly Whiting, said, "Together with our partners and festival organisers, we're working hard to keep everyone, to help everyone enjoy the event in safe environment. We have a mobile police office on site. This will be a central point of contact for festival goers over the weekend, where we will be offering crime prevention advice. You will also see us on patrol. We've been working with the Winchester City Council, Highways England and Boomtown's traffic management contractors to try and reduce traffic congestion on nearby roads. However, as with any event that attracts high numbers, there will be heavy traffic on Thursday as people arrive and on Monday as people leave. Please follow all agencies' social media feeds for the latest updates. We will be maintaining a robust position on both drugs and psychoactive substances, all of which are banned from the site. If you are found with these items, you will at the very least be ejected and barred from returning, and there is a good chance you will be arrested and prosecuted. Even just dabbling in illegal drugs and psychoactive substances has been shown to have devastating consequences. You might think you'll be fine, but you really don't know what you're taking. The only way to be certain is not to take any.
And Q&A My Winchester this week is talking to Jamie Scott about the things that he likes best in Winchester. Jamie Scott is 52, a Liberal Democrat city councillor of King's Avenue, Stanmore, and he shares his favourite things about his hometown, Winchester. What's your favourite restaurant or cafe? My favourite would be 1871 in the Broadway. It is a really good place to have a nice cup of coffee. What's your favourite pub or bar? The pub I really like is the Queen Inn in St Cross. It has a fantastic garden and is a brilliant family pub. What's your favourite shop? Good old HMV in the Brooks. I love going in there and checking out the CDs. What's your favourite building? I like the Peninsula Barracks. My dad was in the King's Royal Rifle Corps for years and years, and I remember going there. It brings happy memories. What's your favourite view? Coming into the city, you can't help but love the view from St Catherine's Hill. It is a stunning view. My second favourite is the view from St Giles's Hill, overlooking the city. Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon? William Walker, because he saved Winchester Cathedral. What is Winchester's best kept secret? Probably where King Alfred is buried. What's the best thing about Winchester? My favourite thing is the water meadows. I love them, and I also love going to the St Cross Hospital summer fete. And the worst? Our strategic planning in the city. We have a fantastic university, but we did not properly plan for it. Is there one thing you can change about Winchester, and what would it be? The biggest thing I would change is I would take away the affordable housing title and bring back social housing. Affordable housing is not affordable in Winchester, but the efforts for social housing would be affordable. Bring back properly rented social housing. And describe Winchester in a sentence: a really attractive hub for tourists.
This article is headed Tributes to Actor Robert Hardy, who dies aged 91. Former Itchen Valley-based actor Robert Hardy has died at the age of 91. Mr. Hardy was known for playing Siegfried Farnham in BBC series All Creatures Great and Small and the Minister for Magic, Cornelius Fudge, in the Harry Potter films. He lived at Avington Park near Alsford for the last 2 years of his life, until recently moving away, and was a regular visitor to the area, often opening the Avington Fete. Before he died, he was living at Denville Hall Retirement Home in London. Tributes have poured in for Mr. Hardy from the world of acting and further afield. One of them was from Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling, who wrote, "So very sad to hear about Robert Hardy. He was such a talented actor, and everybody who worked with him on Harry Potter loved him." Nick Betts, director of script at BBC Studios, said, "Robert Hardy was an iconic British actor of stage and screen, much loved for his role as Siegfried Farnham in All Creatures Great and Small, which ran on the BBC from 1978 to 1990. We are very sorry to hear of his passing today, and our thoughts go out to his family and friends." Mr. Hardy's children, Emma, Justine and Paul, made a statement. "It is with great sadness that the family of Robert Hardy, CBE, today announced his death, following a tremendous life, a giant career in theatre, television and film, spanning more than 70 years. From the early start, post-World War II, with the Shakespeare Memorial Company in Stratford, to his later role in the Harry Potter films as Cornelius Fudge, the Minister for Magic, he will perhaps be most remembered for two iconic roles: as Siegfried Farnham in the long-running and much-loved BBC series All Creatures Great and Small, and in his many and magnificently distinguished portrayals of Winston Churchill. They said that they will remember their father as a meticulous linguist, a fine artist, a lover of music, and a champion of literature, as well as a highly respected historian and a leading specialist on the longbow. He was an essential part of the team that raised the great Tudor warship, the Mary Rose. Gruff, elegant, twinkly, and always dignified, he is celebrated by all who knew him and loved him, and everybody who enjoyed his work. Mr. Hardy's children said they are immensely grateful to the team at the Denville Hall Retirement Home for their tender care during the last weeks before his death. You will also have heard a tribute from John Miller today, the former director of the Winchester Festival.
Prison watchdog is seeking new recruits, is this heading. Volunteers are needed for the watchdogs that oversee Winchester Prison. The Independent Monitoring Board, IMB, is looking for new members to monitor standards of care and fair treatment, talk to prisoners and staff, and attend monthly board meetings, becoming the eyes and ears on the inside. The role is unpaid and independent of the prison. John Tainton, chairman of IMB, said, "You'll work with people from all walks of life and at all levels. This is a position of trust and responsibility, and a prestigious ministerial appointment, your chance to do something unique and stand out from the crowd. Our prime role is to ensure that Ministry of Justice rules and regulations are properly applied and that the highest standard of care and decency are maintained. The job is hugely challenging and absorbing, but it's not for everyone. You need to be enthusiastic, open-minded, resilient, have good communication skills, and have the ability to exercise sound, objective judgment," said Mr. Tainton. "No special qualifications or experience are needed, and training and expenses are provided. Members must live within 30 miles and be able to dedicate about 3 to 4 days each month. HMP Winchester is a Category B and C male prison for nearly 700 adults and young offenders. The IMP, the Independent Monitoring Board, was formerly known as the Board of Visitors. Rota visits are carried out throughout the year where members tour the prison, talking to prisoners and staff about their problems. We get involved in seemingly small things, like locating prisoners' missing property, or worries about visits, to bigger matters like being a major influencer on changes within the prison," said Mr. Tainton. "The majority of prisoners' issues are solved by the staff, but if a resolution is not found, then the IMB may be asked to assist," he added. "Recent reports in the jail have highlighted issues of bullying and fear of violence. For more information, visit the website imb.org.uk or call 020-333-4-3265. And there is an aerial photograph of the prison alongside this article.
And now, railworks boost coach bookings. A major coach company says it's riding to the rescue of Winchester Rail commuters facing a month of rail disruption in London. The UK's largest coach operator, National Express, is seeing bookings on its Winchester to London route increase, while Waterloo Station is partially closed for engineering works, causing chaos to train services. Several of the platforms at the terminus are being lengthened so the station can handle longer trains. The works are set to continue for a 3-week period, August the 5th to the 28th, during which passengers using South West trains face reduced services and delays and have been advised by the train company to avoid travelling. National Express says it has added hundreds of extra seats to cope with the demand.
The heading here is New Hope for Bus Station Cafe Owner. An independent business owner in Winchester has had some fresh hope in his bid to avoid closure. Clive Hibbard, who has run the Bus Station Cafe for 27 years, says the family-run firm is at risk because of a significant drop in trade due to the demolition of part of the bus station by its new owners, the City Council. He says that the work has led to a sharp decrease in footfall and people believing his cafe is closed. However, Mr. Hibbard, who is 60, pays his rent to the former owners of the bus station, Stagecoach, and he has been given some hope to help with his loss of earnings. Stagecoach has agreed to waiver his rent for the time the bus station work is going on. Mr. Hibbert says this means that he has reduced overheads, but he added that he still hasn't had any money from Winchester City Council, who agreed to do the work. Mr. Hibbert said, "I want to say thank you to all the customers who have come in since the article was in the Hampshire Chronicle and the Daily Echo, and people are now more aware we are open. We are not getting, however, as much customers as I would like, due to people still thinking we are closed. I am very grateful for Stagecoach waiving my rent, but there is still an issue with loss of earnings. However, things are looking more positive, and I am hopeful I can stay open." Currently, the City Council is demolishing the 1930s garage, and after that they will spruce up the retained building, which includes updating the bus station office. Buses are temporarily being deployed to the Broadway and are due to return to the revamped station in early September. The City Council has stated its position on this issue that any loss of earnings for Mr. Hibbard would have to come from Stagecoach. The council has been consulting the public on the future of the Silver Hill area, which includes the bus station.
Winchester Street Pastors has received a cash boost from a local business. The charity was presented with £1,400 grant from IBM Hursley towards supporting those out and about in the city at night. An application by IBM content developer Abigail Bettel, who is also a regular street pastor, led to the company making the donation for the second year running. Although the street pastor is independent, they work closely with the police, Winchester Business Improvement District, and with Winchester City Council. Now, the headline has beneath it a very attractive photograph of Abigail Bettel, who applied for the grant, the coordinator, Mark Hibbert Hingston, and the volunteer, Jane Mahi.
And now we have Thousands Enjoy Soggy Wickham Festival. Thousands of people packed through the gates of Wickham Festival to see acts including Katie Tunstall, Seth Lakeman and Show of Hands. Despite the wet weather last weekend, punters queued up for 2.5 hours to get into the event, with people getting stuck deep in the mud and traffic backing onto the A32. Organisers had urged people to put off turning up to the festival for a day due to the downpours and muddy conditions, but many were undeterred. The now well-established festival, which brings several million pounds to the local economy every year, is run by Gosport County Councillor Peter Chegwin. He said, "Despite the weather and having heaven and earth in terms of mud, the show must go on." The festival has grown rapidly from being in the backstage of a community centre to a successful festival. "In many ways, we are returning to our roots with a very strong folk lineup, which will appeal to the many regulars who come year after year, as well as our new generation of fans." Comedy performers included stand-up Zoe Lyons, as well as Tom Walker, better known as the internet sensation Jonathan Pye, the frustrated news reporter known for venting in unguarded off-camera rants. Other performers this year included The Levellers, Oyster Band and The Selector. And this is accompanied by several photographs of the visitors looking very damp but happy, a large group trying to shake out their mats. I think it stopped raining for a minute outside the pilaria. And a couple of people in very definite waterproofs, but holding what looked like pints of local beer and jolly smiles on their faces and saying, "Never let the rain spoil the fun." And a lovely little one of a father lifting up his daughter who has flowers wound round her hair and in a pretty dress. And that one's headed, "Are you going to San Francisco?"
The headline here is Mayoral Tribute to Renowned Professor. The Mayor of Winchester, David McLean, gave a dinner in Abbey House in honour of Professor Martin Biddle, CBE, Director of Winchester Research Unit, to celebrate his recent 80th birthday. The rare honour was in recognition of the archaeological work done over more than 50 years and his ongoing commitment to the city of Winchester over many decades. In his reply to the mayor, Professor Biddle, who has been responsible for a major part of the archaeological excavation of the city back to Roman times, thanked the mayor and all those present representing Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, and the people of Winchester for their continuing interest and support for his work going back to the 1960s. Among the guests were the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, three former mayors, civic and university dignitaries, including the Vice-Chancellor Joy Carter, Dame Mary Fagan, former Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, together with friends and family and members of Winchester Excavation Committee. Professor Biddle is also an honorary Freeman of Winchester. He is a key contributor to Winchester, St. Swithin's City of Happiness and Good Fortune, an archaeological assessment published earlier this summer. The article is accompanied by a photograph full of people obviously having a very enjoyable time. The bishop and his wife are at the back. The mayors, the former mayors, can be seen with their badges of office round their necks. And in the front, Professor Biddle himself and the mayor, David McLean.
Pupils set up mini business for charity is the headline. Budding entrepreneurs at a Winchester primary school took part in a challenge to set up a mini business. This term, year four at Oliver's Battery Primary School, have been taking part in the Fiverr Challenge, run by Young Enterprise. The class were given £5 and were tasked to make as much profit as possible. The challenge was part of their Dragon's Den topic, and the children watched some clips of the programme to understand the process of setting up a business. In their maths lesson, the children carried out some market research about popular board games and collated the results. Small groups then designed and produced their own engaging games. They used their writing skills to create persuasive sales pitches for the games, which they performed to the Scary Dragons, the class teacher, a teaching support assistant, and two year six pupils. To complete the Fiverr Challenge, the children decide to set up a games cafe business called Game On, and they produced a logo and posters to advertise the event. With a bit of help from their parents, the children prepared snacks for selling at the cafe, and on the day, each of the other classes had an opportunity to come and play the games and buy drinks and snacks. The class managed to raise £231.12. And there is a picture joining the article, which shows three young boys in the primary school class working at a table and drawing and preparing for their venture.
And here we have Skate Park being used as scapegoat, say shopkeepers. Skaters have defended Winchester's main skate park following a warning from schools to parents about drug use at the facility. As previously reported in the Chronicle, head teachers at three secondary schools, Henry Beaufort, King's and the Westgate, issued a joint letter over drug use and dealing at the site next to the River Park Leisure Centre. But users of the skate park say it is a positive part of the community. Jack Veer, co-founder of Beans and Boards Skate Shop in Stockbridge Road, said, "It has got a lot better. They seem to be using the place as a scapegoat. There are problems with behaviour and drugs in open-air spaces in Winchester, so I can understand it, but it's all areas. We don't want kids to miss out on a great hobby that they might love because they've heard that there is a problem there. It gets kids some fresh air and exercise and away from their screens. If anything, that space is what has kept kids away from the drugs." Kyle, also a co-owner of Beans and Board, said, "We've held a lot of skateboarding events. The park is part of the community. In April, we had 90 people of all ages gathering there to raise money for charity, and that is the thing that we want to see there. We don't disagree with what the heads and teachers are doing. That's perfectly fine, but there is a bigger picture. If people saw some of the talent down there at the skate park, the 10 and 12-year-olds skating, it's an amazing thing." Harry King, who skates at the park next to the River Park Leisure Centre in Hyde, said, "Since the revamp and compared to what it used to be like, it has a positive impact. There's always going to be problems with drugs anywhere, but it shouldn't be pinpointed on the skate park." David Allison, who also skates at the park, said, "It's very social, like a clubhouse. A lot have been going since they were much younger. Everybody looks after each other. A lot of people travel a long way to Winchester to skate there from across the south coast. It's one of the good ones." Following the letter from King's, Westgate and Henry Beaufort, a meeting took place between the schools and officers from the City Council who own the site regarding antisocial behaviour. However, Hampshire Constabulary stated they had not identified a specific problem with the skate park. Jack added that they were willing to speak to schools or any parents to reassure them. "We're here to help. We're here for any kinds of advice on how to use the park and what to expect when you go down there." The council said there would be regular patrols, CCTV and skate ranger volunteers on site over the summer. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the two gentlemen who run Beans and Boards, Kyle and Jack, in the Stockbridge Road. And they have behind them a wall covered in brightly decorated skateboards, from one which looks like the Last Supper painting on the bottom of it to others with dripping cheese pizzas and all sorts of other designs.
The heading here is "Committee Refuses Homes Plan." Plans for two detached, self-built, six-bedroom homes in Twyford have been refused. Riley Developments Limited want to build the two homes at Highcroft in Love Lane. The plans would involve knocking down the existing boarded-up home on the site. However, Twyford Parish Council have objected to the scheme because the authority believes it goes against the Twyford neighbourhood plan. The plans have had three people objecting to them, and Winchester City Council's planning committee heard concerns about the impact of the homes. Objector Anthony Fanshawe from Twyford said it does not comply with local or national planning policy. Secondly, that from our experience of building an extension, I know that this project will cause a lot of construction traffic. We are likely to be left with a damaged access road to our house, and we are likely to suffer damage to our vehicles as a consequence. Supporting the project, Louise Cutts from Wessex Planning said, "You're presented with a plan that replaces badly positioned dwelling with two attractive plots that have no impact on landscape character. Eight councillors voted to refuse the plans, and one councillor voted in favour."
More than £50,000 is being spent to improve King's Walk and Middle Brook Street in Winchester. The City Council has removed the old fountain and is building raised planters for more seating. The area was previously a hotspot for antisocial behaviour, but civic chiefs are hoping that the work will improve the area, with a possibility of extra measures being introduced. Currently, an area close to the Sweet Ice Cream Lounge is being fenced off for the work. The council says most of the money spent so far has been on demolition and sourcing the same type of stone used in the High Street. A spokesperson said, "The fountain in Middlebrook Street was removed as part of ongoing improvements to King's Walk. Raised planters are currently being built around the ice cream parlour to provide external seating and improve public realm generally for residents, businesses and shoppers. The design of the planters is intended to offer people a more appealing proposition than sitting on the walls, and plants will be added in due course to further improve the appearance of the area. In terms of antisocial behaviour, the situation will continue to be monitored and extra measures would be introduced if necessary. The cost of the work was estimated at £52,000, with the project cleared to go ahead in a cabinet meeting in January."
So that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 11th of August 2017. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Jane Thomas and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
Paul Maxlow Tomlinson.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.